Last week, my wife Katie and my son Guy and I went to Washington, D.C. to spend a week with my son Chad and his daughter, our daughter-in-law Brittany. And we had a great time. We got to spend some time in Washington, D.C. and go to a cabin in Shenandoah River State Park. And while we were there, I wanted to go to a church in Washington, D.C. So that I could take my son Chad to go to church. He doesn't go to church. So I thought, well, maybe if I introduce him to a church that's, a good church, then maybe he'll go back. So, I did what you do. I got on the internet and I looked for the different churches in his area of Bethesda, and I found one that I thought would be attractive to Chad. It's looked like an upbeat, sort of modern, contemporary feel to it. Thought it might be something that would attract Chad and Brittany, so I convinced him to go on Sunday morning. We went there, and sure enough, it was really a welcoming and inclusive church. They made a lot of effort to make sure that everyone knew that they were invited and included. The liturgy was inclusive and welcoming. They sort of toned down some of the language of the prayer book, that can be kind of strong sometimes, and made it a little bit easier to listen to. They emphasized health and healing. There was a good sermon by a young woman priest. When it came to communion, all they had for the bread was rice wafers, because they knew that some people, one or two or a few people, needed to have a non-gluten wafer. So they said, we'll just give non-gluten wafers to everyone. So they had rice wafers for all. And at the invitation to communion, in the bulletin, it was printed there, whoever you are, whatever you believe, or whatever you don't believe, you're welcome and invited to come to communion. At the peace, we were greeted by several people who asked about us and invited us to come back. Same thing after the service. So it was really a welcoming place. I really appreciated all they did to make people feel like they would be welcomed there. But I missed some things. I missed the language of the prayer book. And I love the prayer book. But I missed those powerful, sort of pungent words that the prayer book offers us for some things. Sometimes the prayer book has more for us than we're able to appreciate sometimes, I think. And I missed the Nicene Creed. They took it out, and they substituted something called an affirmation of faith, which was much more inclusive. And it said nothing in there about Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died and buried, and rose again on the third day, and will come again to judge the living and the dead. That was out. I missed it, yeah. It seems to me that religion ought to address some of life's main issues. It ought to talk about life and death. Evil, suffering, human suffering. The reason you go to the doctor is because the doctor knows something about illness and can tell you something about it. The reason you go to church is because the church knows something about evil and death and suffering and can say something to you about it. In the gospel today, Jesus turns his face towards Jerusalem and toward his own death. He tells his disciples, the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day rise again. And Peter says, oh no, Lord, this must never be. And he rebukes Jesus. And Jesus turns around to him, and he immediately rebukes Peter. He says, get behind me, Satan. And he turns to the crowd. And he says, if anyone become my followers, they must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For if any would save their life, they will lose it. And if they would lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel, they will save it. You know, I can understand Peter's response. If I was Peter, I would say the same thing. Why do you want to start talking about your own death and crucifixion? That's crazy. We've been out here in the villages. We've been healing people. You've been teaching. It's wonderful. Why should you want to go where people want to kill you? I mean, after all, Jesus did not have to go to Jerusalem. There was no one telling him he had to go there. He could have stayed out in the villages and continued with his ministry of healing. But he did turn towards Jerusalem. We are in the 8th chapter of Mark. The first 8 chapters of Mark are really full of light and peace. Jesus is in Galilee. He's traveling around. People flock to him. He feeds the people with the feeds the multitudes with the bread. He heals people. He does miracles. I mean, it's wonderful. And now, in the 8th chapter, it begins to turn. He says this to the disciples, and from here on, we see Jesus coming closer and closer to Jerusalem, where he will confront the powers that be and ultimately be crucified. Well, why does he do it? If he doesn't have to, why does Jesus willingly go to Jerusalem and his death? You know, I'm not really sure of the answer to that. Jesus' death is a great mystery. But I think that partly it was to show us that God is always in the midst of human suffering. God never turns away from human suffering, and neither should we. Now, our deacon, Bill Tate, is not here this morning because he's at the Iona School, which is the training school for deacons and for others. But Bill's ministry, his main ministry as a deacon, is to be a chaplain to South Kitsap Fire and Rescue. So he carries a radio with him one week when his week is on, about 1 week in every 6 weeks. And whenever the radio calls him, he has to go and attend to whatever emergency is happening. Usually they call a chaplain to come when there's someone who's been affected and needs someone to help them through a crisis. So he's told me about some of the calls he's been on. He's been called when there's been a suicide. One time he went to a mother whose son had killed himself, and he stayed with her hours and hours through the night until someone from the family could come and be with her. That's not an easy job. Another time he went to a house fire, and the job of the chaplain when there's a fire is to be with the family and sort of keep them out of the way of the firefighters and help them deal with the shock that they're processing at that moment. And then Bill will stay with them until they get connected to the Red Cross and make sure that they have a motel to stay in for the night. Again, it's not an easy ministry to do. He told me one story about a call he got, a place way out south he'd never heard of, and he punched it into his Google Maps and started out there, and it took him down roads that he'd never been and off into a lane that was dark, and he arrived at this place, which was a fella had had a heart attack. And he owned 5 or 10 acres of land there. He had a little trailer on it, and all around the trailer there were these campers and little shacks and trailers where people who were homeless had come to live. Over the years, he'd kind of allowed people to sort of live on his place. And they formed this little community, sort of supporting each other and getting along all right. And this guy had been having some health problems and had a massive heart attack and died. Well, the sheriff came out and had the coroner come and, of course, pronounced the death. And then the sheriff locked up the trailer and took the keys and left. And Bill stayed there with all this community of a dozen or 15 people or so, and tried to help them process what had happened and what they were going to do next. I mean, where are they going to go? And they didn't have access to the bathroom in the trailer or the water anymore. And so they started talking, and they said, "Well, there is the shed out there. I think that's unlocked." And so they began to figure out how they were going to get by, at least for the short term. That's the kind of thing that Bill does. He goes out to where people are having troubles, and he's with them. Why does he do it? Well, I think one reason he does it is because he's pretty good at it. You know, he's one of those kind of big bear hug kind of guys. You just feel comfortable around him, and he can come into any situation, and you will feel like he understands. He's got some skills. But the other reason I think he does it is because he's called to it. God has called him to be with people when they're in trouble and when they're suffering. And he has responded to that call, and that's what he does. If any would become my followers, they must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. There's a lot of suffering in this world.
This is just competition.
Oh, okay. Oh, future preacher.
Not yours.
There's a lot of suffering in this world. There's a hurricane going on in the East Coast. There's a looming battle pending in Syria where many people are going to die. We know of suffering in our own family and friends, right in our own communities and in our own lives. God does not turn away from the face of human suffering, and neither do we. We acknowledge it, and we are present with it. And when we come to church, one of the main symbols we see is a symbol of the cross up there. And it reminds us that God spreads out his arms of love to all those who are in need. God never turns away from them, and neither should we. Amen.